Hello, promoters, and welcome to Roll Up. We are, surprisingly, against all odds, back together, the three of us. It's been a year, and it has been a year. We are thrilled to be back here in your ears or on your screens talking about the game that we love and all of the lines under the Filsinger Games umbrella. My name is Sam Fain, and I am joined, of course, by Mike Molesky and Todd Jorschel, and we're going to have a good time tonight. So I'm going to swing it over to Mike first. Mike? How are you? How you've been?
Fantastic, Sam. Always good to be with you. Glad to be here with everybody and just looking forward to having some fun.
Fantastic. Me too. Todd, how about you?
Doing great. Never say never. Roll Up is back. So, yeah. My lights just went out for a second.
Was that a power outage? A brownout?
No.
It's
a wife who turned off the lights on me unexpectedly.
She's giving you the 5-minute call, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, no, no more roll up. It's over. It's over.
Yeah, no, yeah. I thought this was over.
It's over before.
But no, this is great. No, so happy to be back. Good to see you guys, smiling faces. It's been way too long.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. You know, the wonderful thing is, of course, is that there's been just an amazing amount of Filsinger Games content to digest in our absence, whether it's other podcasts or YouTube channels or of course the myriad releases that have happened in the meantime. And we are hot on the heels of another release that just dropped about a week ago, and I'm looking, in fact I got my cards exactly a week ago, my beautiful Big Boss Man.
That's Ray Trailer.
Yes. Officer Trailer, Georgia Correctional Department. But this, you know, the Be Cool card is just gorgeous. I love that. So let's talk a little bit about these new releases. You know, let's go ahead and start with 2094, because I feel like out of everything, this definitely took a bit of a different turn from the prior color sets that had been released. Of course, this is the colorization of Larry Sinelli's fantastic 2094 art. Some of this stuff is just iconic. I've been, you know, a huge fan of this art for, you know, going on 30 years now. And I would love to hear the kind of the behind the scenes on why the decision was made to colorize this art as opposed to commissioning new art like the previous sets, and kind of what your overall feelings are on the release as it stands, Mike. So take it away.
Well, I mean, I think that first off, you know, one of the things with Chuck is I think I put myself in the camp of people who love Chuck's art. Like, I think it's classic. I think it's iconic. It's wonderful. I think when Tom got around to doing the anniversary set where he re-released the first six in color and then the next six and the next six and the next six, he felt that Chuck's art might have looked a little dated to a modern audience. And so I think he decided to have, you know, Daryl do that art. And then, you know, then when 2088 went out of print, we decided, well, let's continue this color thing going for the old stuff. So you can play 2087 and then play, you know, 2088 in color. And so, but again, we wanted it to be updated. So we went with Warner, right? Because Warner does great work. And so we did Warner for 2088, 89, 90, 91, 92, 93. And it was fantastic. Like, if I saw some rumor out there that what was wrong with Warner's work, there's nothing wrong with Warner's work. Warner's work was awesome. I think that the thought with this one was Snelly's art is much more modern looking. Like, it translates well today. If you look at what Daryl does, what Nate does, like Tom Rickard does, what Warner does, Snelly's art fits with it, I think, in a way that's different than Chuck's. Chuck had his own style that was different and unique. This sort of fits. And so I think that's why Tom thought this was a good idea. I think, yeah, you know, I think these guys are all, and Snelly's art is fantastic. I think that, especially this set, like, there's, you know, you always talk about the misses in a set for an artist, and they're all relative, right? You know, great artists have some work that's better than others, but I think this one, top to bottom by Snelly, was really fantastic. And so there was some, you know, Tom had talked about maybe redoing one or two, but he didn't see one that he wanted to redo, so we just went with all of Snelly's originals on this one. And I think it worked out. So, I mean, I think that's the basic backstory behind it, like how it happened. It's not really complicated.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. I mean, it is nice to kind of take a look behind the scenes and know what went into the decision-making process, because it is something that veers away from what I think promoters were used to seeing with the reimagined sets. And you know, can you talk a little bit about what was done to the backs of the cards as far as stats go, any changes that might have been made to maybe bring them more in line with changes that had already been made to the prior sets? Did it require, you know, any changes like the previous sets had?
Yeah, I mean, before I get to that, though, one thing I did want to say on is you said it's a change. Well, 2094 was a change, right? This was the first set without Chuck.
Sure.
Right? So already we're having a change no matter what, right? In terms of, like, how this went in real history, like in back in the day. So I think this was if we were going to do something different, this was a good set to do something different with. I forgot to mention that, you know, when I was talking about it. In terms of the stats, it's mostly like the others. You know, there was, you know, some two choice H's, you know, kind of things that needed to be fixed, you know, and some stuff that got, I mean, there was a couple little typos and things like that. I mean, but I'd say most of the stat changes were just, I'll call them fixes. I mean, Frenzy still has two level, straight level two moves off of level three offense. Right. So does Psycho. Right. So we didn't there weren't a lot of changes to the relative strength of the cards, but I think it was just more modernized for, there may have been one or two tweak ups, but for the most part, it's all just a fix, I'll say, for any modern rules corrections.
Yeah.
And then I know like Psycho had a, you know, rules violation where he didn't go on to Death Jump, and Tom clarified, no, we don't want Psycho doing a Death Jump.
That was intentional. So. That was intentional. Right. Yeah. So just sort of like Archon doesn't have an out of the ring, like on his original card, like this was an intentional violation of the rules, not an inadvertent one.
Right.
So that was clarified and implemented accordingly.
I mean, which obviously makes a lot of sense. Todd, I am curious as to what your thoughts are on the set. And I'd love to for you to give promoters an update just on, you know, what your job has been like when it comes to Filsinger Games, because I know that obviously you've taken a bit of a step back, you know, this year. And, you know, if you wanted to talk about any of that, obviously feel free. But yeah, again, just love to hear your thoughts on 2094. And then also just maybe talk a little bit about kind of where you fit within the Filsinger Games paradigm. Now.
Sure. No, absolutely. Yeah, so 2594 is kind of a big set for me. That was the first set that I got on release in the original set, because I got it right after 2093 came out. So 2094 for me, you know, I kind of just got started with everything and kind of coming in and, you know, being part of the new set when it first came out. And I loved the Larry Snelly art, you know, to me at the time, like, you know, I had just seen Chuck's for the first time. I got this new one. I'm like, wow, this is great. You know, some of the first couple of years. So, I mean, to keep the Larry Snelly art for me was kind of cool still. And as far as my place with everything, you know, when it comes to a lot of the production stuff, like, you know, Mike does, you know, the yeoman's work of most everything there, but I'll come in, I'll definitely go and proof over some things. So I'll take a look at, you know, some of the different versions of it, give my, you know, feedback there. Mostly I'm very much the formatting person, making sure all the format of everything looks right. So I'll do a lot of proofing on that. And there might be some stat entering into online that I help out with as well, you know, on occasion there. So, you know, things like that. And then obviously, you know, the cons, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little later on then too.
Yes.
I'm still hanging around helping out with that, because I think that's his own separate thing, and I don't think anybody else trusts anybody else to do it. So there you go.
I'm not sure anybody else wants to do it.
Well, that might be it too. Yes, yes.
There's the other side of that coin.
Is it?
Yeah, you know, just to kind of throw my two cents in real quick, I think that the Larry Snelly art, like I said earlier, is pretty iconic. And, you know, the introduction of War in particular, I mean, Mace and Dregs were two of my favorites. Dregs is one of my favorite COTG characters, period, of all time. And I feel like he's one of those guys that's never had bad art. So, you know, whether it's his first card
you're right about that. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Sure. You know, so it was really cool to see, you know, to see this art colorized. You know, it's interesting because there are a couple of things, you know, choices that were made as far as colors go that I'm sure, you know, promoters can debate until they're blue in the face over. But overall, I really do enjoy the look of the set. And I feel like the nice thing is that, yes, these were, you know, line drawings that were not necessarily intended to be colored initially. And they certainly have their differences between the Warner art that we've seen, or the Daryl Banks art that we'd seen on the other reimagined stuff. But I feel like they also still fit very nicely with that. So if you're rolling out matches, whether you've got the cards in hand or you're on COTG online, I don't think that there's going to be anything incredibly jarring. And the truth of the matter is, as you mentioned earlier, it's certainly no more jarring than if you were using Chuck Carter art next to the Larry Snelly art, you know? So it's exciting because I think that it opens a door up that a lot of folks hadn't necessarily considered, because I think we just all assumed that there would be new art for each set. And now, you know, here we are with the potential to have some of these other sets colorized down the road, perhaps, or you know, who knows what could happen. What if we got some special edition cards down the road that were, you know, what were new art for some of these characters or something. So I think it's great. And of course, 2094 is a super cool set on its own. A sudden death coming into play. You know, we got some really cool characters and including the Doomsday creature, which is just, again, I mean, this one in particular, I feel like stands out and is really well done.
Background.
Well, and I think another thing, Sam, is that there was some concern about what art looks like when we do a teaser, right?
Oh,
and
sure,
what
right.
It looks like when it's in your hand.
Yep.
And I do think that, and I think even online it looks better than it did in the teasers, and I'm not sure why that is, but maybe it's the resolution or whatever in terms of we shrink it down a little bit for the website. But I do think that the printed stuff, I think when you get that in your hands and you look at it, you understand it a little bit better. It feels better. It has that appearance. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those unavoidable things, you know, when you color, it is really inherently difficult to sometimes get what the printed color is going to look like versus what it looks like on a screen.
Yeah, I mean that is a great point, and we've seen it happen before. You know, I mean, I remember, even with early classics, you know, there was definitely, I think, question over what things looked like on the screen versus what they looked like once we had them printed in hand. So it's not necessarily a new phenomenon at all, and it's a worthy discussion to have. You know, I mean, if people have comments, then I think that anytime we start that discussion, it can always help for future choices, and sometimes those comments might not necessarily be warranted based off of the final product, but you know, it's a passionate, amazing community that has lots of thoughts and feelings. And again, that discourse, you know, is never a bad thing, as long as it doesn't devolve into name calling.
Well, I think, but that's also one of the reasons why this is great to do this, because we could talk about it a little bit. Whereas before, it was like, is anybody really listening to this? No, I knew it looked different than it was going to look on paper. Like if you're in the production business, you know what you see on a web page is going to display differently lots of times than it will on a printed piece of paper. Like it's
Absolutely.
Just a simple fact of life. But you know, sometimes maybe people were out there thinking we didn't know that, or we didn't hear that, or no, we did. We got it. We're with you.
Like, right.
You feel what you're worried about, and we're trying to do our best to make sure that when it does come out, it looks the way it should look.
Yeah, I you know, and that's the thing too. You know, the last year plus that I've been working at the game store, I'm the director of marketing now for a local game store that has 3 locations in the Chicagoland area. You know, one of the things that this past couple of months, even going to GAMA, which is the Game Manufacturers Academy or Association, excuse me, which is a trade show for game stores where you go and you get to see all the new stuff that's coming. People are trying to kind of like, you know, sell you on the new games. And then of course Adepticon just last week, which was you know, it's one of the biggest tabletop miniature wargaming conventions in the world, and another opportunity for people to kind of show off their new wares and that sort of stuff. And oftentimes you'll see things, you know, even with like miniatures, models, you know, three-dimensional things that you can hold in your hand, you'll see like a white print, which is like the resin kind of proof that they print for these models. And it will indeed look different when you have the actual, you know, plastic in hand, or sometimes it's resin or whatever, you know, they're using. You know, not to mention, of course, art. You know, I got handed a flyer at GAMA for a role-playing game, and the flyer was literally a picture of the RPG handbook, right? And then when we got the RPG handbook in store, it looked different from the picture of the handbook on the flyer that I got. So it's, yeah, I mean, that's just one of those things. It can be lighting, it can be the camera that was used, it can be the colors, it can be, you know, anything, colors in the printer, etc. It's
well,
always...
And plus, Sam, I mean, and you know this, Pantone colors. People yeah. talk about you use your Pantones. Well, the reason people use Pantones is because you know what it's going to look like when it prints.
Right.
But conversely, it looks different when you put it on a screen. A Pantone color does not look the same on a screen as it does on a piece of paper.
Yeah. I mean, when I had to do the badges, the merit badges, when I worked at the Joffrey Ballet, because the Girl Scouts got a merit badge when they came to the ballet to see the Nutcracker. And so I would have to design these Nutcracker merit badges every year. And I mean, with the help of our graphic design team, but I would kind of come up with the, you know, the initial thought, the ideas or whatever. And yeah, I mean, I would get these, you know, these images, right? And then I'm sending it off to the company that makes the merit badges. And without fail, you know, they're always looking a little bit different once we got them in hand.
It's a real nerdy way of saying, yes, it looked different on the screen and we knew it. And we hope people are happy with the way it looked in print.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's not to say like, you know, save your comments until you have it in hand
or anything like that. No.
But it is obviously one of those things to at least consider sometimes. And regardless of how anyone feels, I think that in my opinion anyway, I don't think there's been a case yet where the cards have not looked better in hand that they look on the screen.
Well, part of that's being a gamer, right? You want them in your hands anyway, so
feels
better.
Absolutely,
right?
You know, like, yeah. So let's keep the COTG train rolling here, and let's talk about the Mythworlds Prime cards here for 2025 Q1. I'm going to start off with these gentlemen here with the Moog and Sentinel cards, which we've got the beautiful connecting art once again.
Yes.
I love the colors on this. I love the background. You know, obviously established characters that had already had art, which of course Shane was as well. But we do have a new artist here. So Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about our new artist here for the gentleman from Castalix as well as our cowboy.
Nate's done some art for us. He did the last early classic set. You know, he did a couple prime cards previous to that. He's a new guy, but I really, you know, I think I like what he's doing. I think it's definitely different than Daryl's art. I mean, I know I'm not going to sit here and say it's Daryl Banks doing art, but
sure.
But I think it's worthy to be in the mix. I think he's a talented guy. I like Castalix. I think that it's a different take on them than the original, but I also think that, you know, that's okay. Like, I mean, you know, I know that there's a certain thought, you know, and I have a good friend of mine who often will talk about how he wants it all to be Banks and look the same and everything else, which is a perfectly reasonable point of view.
Right.
But if you look at the history of Champions of the Galaxy, you know, 2094 is the start of mixing of art, right? Where we have different artists mixing their stuff. And it goes, I mean, at one point we had, I think, as many as three different artists working on one set. I think there was one where we had Daryl, Hannibal, and Jeremy all did art for one of the sets, I think, at one point. There's stuff with, like, Brian
17
and
or
Jeremy.
Something.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've had this over the years where we've had multiple artists working on sets, two, three artists working on one set. So, and we've certainly had periods of time where we've had, you know, I think by the time 2099 rolls around, we may have had four different artists work all in play at the same time. I think we still had some original Chuck stuff. We definitely had Snelly stuff. We had Mike stuff, and we had Brian stuff, like all active at one time.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's not like maybe we've gotten sort of spoiled by Daryl art being like the standard and being there for the GWF, but it's not new that we mix artists within the Champions of the Galaxy universe.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I like about Nate's art for Sentinel and Moog in particular is that, you know, I love Daryl's art, obviously. I mean, when I got the chance to interview him at Galacticon a few years back, I was just kind of sitting there thinking like, man, I just talk comic books, you know, all day with Daryl. And I remember his art on Green Lantern and reading that comic when I was younger. But anyway, you know, his art always has that very, you know, kind of superheroic look to it, which is great. And it fits in with COTG perfectly. But in my opinion, I think Sentinel and Moog look a little bit more like wrestlers in this art than they even did before, which is kind of cool because, you know, at the end of the day, like, it's a wrestling game and that's how I've always kind of felt about it. So I dig that. I dig that. We've got the Shane art, the neon cowboy look here. this art I feel like has been a little bit divisive, but yeah, I don't know. Mike, talk about.
Well, I mean, look, I think Shane's, again, you get back to, it's a different style. I think definitely Nate's style is a little different, but I do think that, I know that Tom just did an interview with Grant yesterday, I think it was. So I'm sure he's going to talk about it and his reasoning for it. So I don't want to like try and get into that because, quite frankly, I don't know all of it as well as he does. But I, you know, it's different. But I think if you look at like Scorn's art from a couple sets back, where, you know, her art got updated, it's sort of consistent with that. And they've been a team now for a little while. So I think it makes sense that his look might change, even though I wasn't necessarily thinking that was going to come. Looking at it now, I'm like, well, that kind of makes some sense.
Sure. Yeah. Todd, any thoughts to add on the COTG Prime cards for this quarter?
Well, you know, definitely some of the mechanics did change too. I know the original Castlix had some different tag, you know, the tag mechanic for Moog where he didn't really get worn down there. That's gone, but he still has a very, you know, heavy tag focus card. Sentinel, I think he used to have one that would get stronger as he took more damage. Now it's just kind of more of a straight on there. So I'll be interested to see if Tom has anything on that. And I know Shane, like every single time he's gotten an update, the Shane's Fury has changed a little bit. It maybe kind of gotten a little bit weaker there. And I mean, his cards are still really strong, but then just noticed that's a little different too. Just, you know, how much of an impact that might have at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's one of the things that I think that initially even drew me to the game, reading about it in, you know, PWI all those years ago, is the fact that characters could evolve and change, grow older, you know, retire, etc. And, you know, just seeing the progression of these characters, and certainly of a character like Shane, you know, it's natural, it's going to happen. You know, we get these guys in and sometimes, you know, they get better. And then, of course, they're going to start showing their age a little bit, and they're going to, you know, they're going to be different. They're going to change. So stats wise, yeah, I mean, I think that the card makes total sense, and it'll be really interesting to kind of see, you know, how he performs. Yeah, so I look forward to kind of seeing what promoters do with him going forward.
Well, and Moog and Sentinel, you know, I think it was the Wardoon sleep. Am I remembering that correct? The Wardoon sleep that they used to do, which is how they got their strength.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're now, they used to be always going back to Castalix, right? They could always return to Castalix. They could do the thing. Right. So now they're sort of out of, they're not even just out of their system, but now they're out of time, right? They're in a different, you know, pocket of the universe. So, you know, that has to have an impact on them, you would think,
right,
with something that's so, like, critical to their success. So I think it makes sense that they would have some kind of change too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, that's just one of the beauties of the game. You know, it's one of those things that is unique to that line. You know, we don't necessarily have, you know, we have a few outliers here in Legends and in Indies where we have a couple of different versions that might represent a younger, inexperienced version and prime version. But for the most part, you know, we're getting the snapshot of a guy at a certain time, especially in the Indies, right? You know, this guy was hot in this moment. And so, you know, he's statted to look that way. This guy was new and fresh, so he's statted to look that way. In Indies, you know, they do their best to kind of encapsulate a career, or maybe again it's a snapshot of a certain time in a guy's career, but it tends to kind of focus on what our memory is of them overall, for instance. So I think it's, again, it's one of the things that drew me to the game in the first place, and the fact that we have the opportunity to have that evolution, I think, adds a lot to the verisimilitude of the game. So I think it's great, and I think stat wise you know, the changes and the evolutions, and then of course getting the opportunity to hear what Tom has to say and what the thought process is behind all that is always a lot of fun. So I look forward to Grant's interview over on Solo Promoter, which I think I saw on the Discord. He said that he was going to try to have that up maybe Wednesday or Thursday.
I think it's tomorrow. Yeah.
Pretty quick.
I guess, you know, behind the curtain, we're Tuesday here. So,
right. Yeah. It's Tuesday, April the 8th. So we're not.
Whenever this may drop.
We won't do it.
I think his Patron subscribers can. Here now.
Patreon.
So that
Patron? Are they the drinking tequila?
I know. I'm thinking about tequila. I don't know.
Yeah. Bro, subscribers here.
That's right. No, his Patreon subscribers, I think, had access to it already, but I think it's going live for the general audience on Wednesday.
Cool. Very cool.
So next up, let's talk a little bit about the Indie Prime releases and the Indie set that we got, of course, as well. Let's start off with Stingray here. Paul Walterhauser from Cobra Kai fame.
Yeah.
You know, what a cool get. What a cool, awesome card. What, you know, I think is interesting to me is, you know, here's a guy who, you know, was making a name for himself and had this this very cool role on a show that got super popular. And certainly he was a bit of a standout on the show with what his character went through, especially considering how he kind of started out. It was kind of a bit of a joke. And I think that the arc and trajectory for the character was fascinating and really well done by the actor as well. So now here he is, you know, saying like, hey, I've always wanted to be a wrestler, so I'm going to go be a wrestler. And, you know, been on the indies, has definitely faced some top names. And, you know, and here we have him signed, and now he's got a card in the game. So I think that's pretty cool. Todd, what are your thoughts on Paul Walterhauser joining the ranks of indies?
Like I say, really cool to have an Emmy winner with the card there too. You know, he did win it for the Cobra Kai. You know, had a more serious role there, and has done some other cool stuff there. But no, I'm totally psyched for that win. Zeke said he was going to the show there, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to try to talk to him." I'm like, "That would be amazing." And then he texted me like later that night. He's like, "Oh, he just signed and he loved my PWG shirt." I'm like, "All right, I knew the guy was a fan, and I got to think for him, like, he probably knows some of the different things around there, you know, being a big indie fan." So I don't know how familiar he was with the game or not, but he was just like, "No, that's cool. I'd love to have a, you know, like be in a wrestling game. That's super cool." So I think that's neat that he was helping him out, you know, Zeke out with move names and stuff like that over Facebook too. And
nice,
yeah, that's super cool that he was so into it. Yeah, then we were just trying to, the hard part was trying to figure out, you know, I still consult with Zeke a little bit on some of the artwork references and stuff like that. I'll still, you know, chime in with some thoughts and whatnot, and his was a tough one to try to figure out what we wanted to do. There was you know, that he had this one idea with that. There was a different logo on the hat, so we replaced it with the Philistine Games logo. So I'll you know, Bill Alfonso style.
There. Yeah, so, yeah.
But no, super thrilled with that card. Yeah, I think the hard part there was also trying to figure out how strong to make him, because like he has been winning, but he's not necessarily, you know, trained wrestler. Like, so it's kind of tough. Like, all right, where do you kind of fit him in with there? And I was trying to think, you know, is there some type of mechanic where he could, you know, pull out a surprise win or something like that? And it was tough to try to figure that out, but he got a couple other things in there that fit the character pretty well. So I'm thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mike, anything to add to that one?
No, I mean, just that it was exciting. Like, that's one of those, like, cool gets that, you know, for the game. You know, obviously I've seen his work on the screen and it's cool, but then to see him as a wrestler is also cool, and to have a card for him is even cooler. So
absolutely,
you know, we're watching the last season of Cobra Kai, and I'm like watching it with my wife, and I'm like, yeah, you know, he's in the game.
He's, yeah, we got that guy.
She's like, what are you talking about? Like, he's a wrestler. No, she is. And he's, no, yeah, no, he is. Really.
But yeah, really. Yeah. Yeah. We also got a card for Griffin McCoy, which, yeah. Definitely an indie standout. He's had, you know, a good run in CZW and GCW in particular, but you can find him all over the place, quite frankly. Yeah, super cool, great card. You know, throw him in there with somebody like Jordan Oliver, who I know he feuded with last year a bit. I had a couple of great matches with him in GCW. But probably the, you know, the card that was the surprise for numerous reasons, and we're going to talk about this, but a welcome one at that, of course, is this new color Brody Lee, which is just a really great tribute to someone that we lost all too soon, and someone who I think was contributing to professional wrestling, in particular to AEW at the time, in a very big way, and bringing quite a lot to the table, getting to do stuff that he hadn't had the opportunity to do prior to that, which is unfortunate, because I think that there were definitely times in WWE where, you know, he was ripe for a change, ripe for a little bit more, and they didn't necessarily pull the trigger on him. And so, you know, when he got to AEW and the run that he had there, you know, I think was really just getting started, quite frankly. It was definitely a rough night watching that tribute episode that they put together, but also a beautiful night. And now here we have our own little tribute at Philsinger Game style with this brand new card, which is awesome. So Mike, I'm going to throw it over to you, because this was not the plan. Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because I know that it was something that also generated a lot of discussion, you know, on the various outlets that promoters have. So let's kind of hear the story there for why we got Brody Lee.
I mean, you know, obviously we advertised Casey Navarro, so that's not a surprise that he's the one who's missing. I don't want to, like, beat around the bush on that.
For sure.
Casey Navarro's card was the one that was pulled. And it was really a simple thing. Casey didn't remember signing and had some questions, and we couldn't get him resolved before it was time to release the card. So rather than put out a card that he wasn't going to be comfortable with getting out there necessarily, right, that he was not remembering, and we just decided it was better business to go ahead and do a different card. So Brody Lee, you know, had been one of the Legends of the Future guys, right? Todd signed him for Legends of the Future way, 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 way back in the day. And we did a Chikara card for him in that Chikara intro set.
Yep.
And the thought was, you know what, let's just do another Brody Lee card, because people would like it. That was really the thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there ever any thought given, because I know obviously, you know, in the wake of his passing, I mean, I was a part of the discussions, but there were discussions about things to, you know, ways to honor him, potentially a new card, all of that sort of stuff. And of course, the sentiment that was kind of agreed upon at the time is that, well, we didn't want to do anything that would seem in poor taste or anything that would seem like we were, you know, grief mining or anything like that. So it was, you know, the decision was wisely made to not do anything at the time. Mm-hmm. Now, yep. You know, in the years that have passed since then, here we are, we're getting this card. Was there ever any thought in the intervening time to doing a Legends card for Brody as opposed to doing an Indies card?
I'll say that I don't want to say there's no thought in it.
Sure.
I would just say that we weren't ready to do that for Legends. We've been fortunate to have had a really good run of Legends cards.
Absolutely.
In the interim. And the thought was here that we're going to honor his indie career a little bit. It's, if you look at the card itself, I think it represents a progression in his career from that first Jakar card. Some people may say it's not strong enough based on what he achieved, and I'm not going to argue with that. But I think that it's a pretty good representation of him on the as a wrestler. And it was just, I think it was a good time,
yeah.
Right? And we're clearly not trying to exploit his memory because we didn't advertise it.
Right.
We wanted to be very sensitive to him and his legacy. And because he was a supporter of the game, he had a great career. We all admired him. I had a chance to meet him when he was working for Chikara. He was a really nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think this was just a good thing, a good way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Todd, can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on Brody Lee and this card, and then also maybe a little bit about the decision to go with this version of Brody Lee and not necessarily go with like a Mr. Brody Lee, for instance, or something like that?
Well, you know, I think, you know, part of the decision was, you know, to, you know, still in the Indies line. So we wanted to represent something that kind of encompassed all the Indies career there. You know, the one that was Chikara was very Chikara focus, whereas, you know, he did a lot of stuff outside of there, obviously Ring of Honor, other areas like that. Similar look, but with that. So yeah, I think that the idea was to still like, okay, how we kind of know him there, similar to when he was in WWE, you know, most of the time there. So yeah, I think we wanted to kind of keep to that since it is in the Indies line, and we want to make sure everything was good there. And I think, you know, the one thing we were trying to, you know, find some different photo references there. We were, shout out to Kevin Ford, who I reached out to on my travels when we were trying to, you know, come up with this there. He has a lot of different things from his indie archive that he was able to find a couple different references, and found a good one here that we were able to use for the photo reference there. It was a short time period getting everything there because, you know, we were getting ready to release, so we wanted to get something done pretty quick. So yeah, big shout out to Werner and Zeke and everyone and Mike for, you know, making that happen so quickly so that we were still able to get out the sets on a timely basis. It was amazing that I was able to come together like that. Don't think it's don't count on it. Always happening.
It was a logistical challenge, let's say that.
Well, it's funny because that was kind of, you know, one of the first calls that you and I had in a while, Mike, when you called and kind of told me about what was going on and about, you know, obviously wanting to do roll up. And we, you know, peek behind the roll up curtain. This is something that we've talked about now, probably going back to like October, November, you know, and getting back, you know, into the swing of things and getting a show out again.
I think you could go back to the summer of 23 when we were talking about it.
Sure. I mean, it's definitely been a process, but I think the kind of the serious conversation really started then, and we, you know, we had a few phone calls and that sort of stuff, but we hadn't really, you know, other than a couple of texts here or there, we hadn't really talked in depth. And then you kind of called me as this was going on, and you know, I think the cards were already at the printer at that time, but they were not ready yet, you know. And it was like, and I'm mailing this stuff out in like 2 days or whatever, you know, but they're going to be ready. So it's a testament, I think, to just being able to think fast and kind of that you know, just being able to stay flexible with the situation and go with the flow. Again, I think promoters are kind of rewarded in a way. It's too bad that Casey Navarro obviously didn't get a card. It always stinks when you have to, you know, go back on something you've already advertised. Exactly.
Not to say won't get one. It's just that we didn't feel it was right to put it out under those circumstances.
Absolutely. Wait until you get the clarity. Everybody will feel better about it. I completely understand. Totally agree. And I think, again, you know, we it was a win-win, right? Either we got Casey Navarro, or in this case, we got Brody Lee, and it's a beautiful, awesome card. So, you know what? Obviously, we don't want to get too in the weeds here and take up all the time. So we're going to kind of just talk about a couple of names here in the indie set before moving on and kind of wrapping up, talking about Legends a little bit. But one of the names that we got to talk about, of course, is Amazing Red, which yes. It's a killer card. It's killer art. It's super cool. And I think having, you know, Amazing Red here, you know, in this set, in this game, is a wonderful, wonderful thing. He's somebody that's been around now for like, you know, 20 years and is just a plus and is somebody who is a icon of the independent wrestling scene. Todd, do you want to talk a little bit about Amazing Red?
I mean, super influential wrestler for so many people, you know, the young guys right now. I mean, just this is one guy that's been on our radar quite a while of something that we wanted to do. Like, you know, even though he still wrestles now, it's almost kind of like the Legends of the Indies type name. When Zeke was able to get him recently, it was like, oh, yeah, he's definitely, you know, definitely in the best of the indie set. And he's definitely, well, he was definitely going to be the headliner until we got to somebody else. You know, there's a little bit of a debate there. So, super, super psyched to get him, and so many great matchups that you can have with him with so many other guys from the game. So yeah, to me, he is probably the one I was most excited about in the set. So your mileage may vary there, but
right. Todd, anything to add about Amazing Red?
You mean Mike?
He's out of practice.
It's been a while. I had to call you.
You're right to do it. You know, I'm rusty. What can I say? Mike, do you have anything to add about Amazing Red?
Just that I'll echo what Todd said about being super excited about having him in the game. Like, I mean, he's one of those indie legends. I'm not as into the indies as Todd or you, like, but to me, it was like Amazing Red, what? Yeah. That was one of those got my attention right away. Little behind the curtain on this one, it's the Zeke picks out great references for these guys all the time. But I'll admit that this one was my reference.
Nice.
I overrode Zeke on this. I was like, no, we're doing this because it's better. And we updated it. It's actually a younger picture of him that we then updated with some of make it look a little bit more modern.
Yeah.
And Werner did a bang up job integrating everything we wanted in it. Like, so he was taking sort of multiple sources and making it work. But I will admit that Zeke 99% of the time picks out these great references that everybody loves. But this one is the one time I'll say I think I ever said, because I just felt that strongly about this card that it had to kick ass and I wanted it to be.
That's a good call.
Awesome.
Yeah. No, I'm with it. Speaking of kick-ass art, speaking of mileage may vary, here's one that I love and one worth mentioning, of course. It's another card for Joey Janela. You know, I think this art is great. I think it's a fantastic representation of Janela. I think that, you know, again, Zeke did some great stats for him. Obviously, someone that is, your mileage may vary on your opinion of Joey Janela, but, you know.
That's for sure.
You know, but hey, mud shows have their stars too, damn it. No, look, I've met Joey a couple of times and I actually like him quite a bit. So, you know, you can pillory me later if you want to. But I think it's cool that, you know, again, you know, something that we don't necessarily get all the time when it comes to the indies line is that progression of character. And certainly, you know, I think the Ring of Honor sets, we saw that a little bit, but it's been a while since we've had those sets, clearly. And so now being able to kind of get this update for Joey Janela is pretty cool after the CZW version that we had some years back. So, Todd, do you want to talk a little bit about this one?
Yeah. I'm a big Joey Janela fan. When Zeke brought the idea of bringing him in there, I'm like, yeah, no, he needs an update. This is a guy that definitely needs it. To have the little tag with Megan Bain, who just got a card recently there, incorporating that. Although, it doesn't look like they're going to be tagging too much more.
I don't know how much they're going to tag
anymore. But I think also adding in some of the deathmatch stats, which really wasn't a thing when his CZW card came out. So being able to incorporate some of that stuff into there to the card now too, I think it really, really adds a lot to it. And I think, yeah, this is a great update there. It's too bad we don't have a color Sabu card to put him against for the retirement match there that's coming up in a couple weeks. But we'll see. Maybe sometime down the line that'll happen.
Fingers crossed. Mike, anything to add to that?
Well, I will admit to not ever having met Joey and not really being a fan of his work just because it's not my thing.
Sure.
But But I do recognize who he is in the industry. I recognize his notoriety, and I know a lot of people are excited for the cards. So I'm excited for them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing, right? We don't have to yuck somebody's yum. So that said, let's talk who is, I think, for most people, sorry, Todd, the headliner of this particular set. And it's a huge signing. It really, really is. And when I found out about this, I was just thrilled to the moon and back. And that is, of course, Kenta. You know, there's a lot to say about this, to be honest with you, because I think getting this Kenta is, I mean, obviously any version of Kenta was going to be a coup. You know what I mean? Like, just how amazing. But getting this version of Kenta, I think, leaves a lot of room. And that's definitely something worth maybe talking a little bit about. Because this is, of course, you know, this is pretty much modern day Kenta, right? This is the Kenta that we've seen for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, right? And, still a great wrestler, still an incredible presence, whether it's, you know, in New Japan, where he spent a lot of time, you know, over the past, you know, 5, 8 years or so, or, you know, indies or, you know, anything else that he's done. That said, this Kenta is not necessarily the same Kenta that we would get if we, you know, peeled back the years and we looked especially, you know, towards his career in Noah, in Pro Wrestling Noah, where he was, you know, one of the biggest stars that they had. You know, basically him and Mara Fuji were the two top guys. And even prior to being the top guy, he was still one of their biggest, you know, biggest stars. And whether it was as a heel, which he was splendid at, or, you know, his babyface runs, you know, he was easily one of the top junior heavyweights in the world, one of the best wrestlers in the world, period. So much so that, you know, other great wrestlers, you know, like CM Punk or Bryan Danielson were stealing his moves just outright, you know, and somebody that I think has inspired a lot of folks. You know, unfortunately dealt with a lot of injuries when he was at NXT and wasn't able to really ever reach his full potential, I think, while he was there, which is too bad. But all that said, I'm thrilled to have him in the game. I think that this is a great card. I think it's great art. I think it's awesome to have him in the Indies game line. You know, Todd, I'll throw it to you first if you want to talk a little bit about Kenta and this particular version of Kenta. And then Mike, I would love to hear your thoughts on maybe getting more Kenta in the future. So Todd, take it away.
Yeah, no, so I mean, I was blown away when Zeke told me that he got the Kenta sign there. Obviously, that was one that he was talking up a lot on the boards ahead of time with you know, some credence behind it. I will fully admit I haven't watched a ton of Kenta more recently. I don't usually watch too much New Japan, but, you know, I know just what an important guy this is in the history of wrestling and his influence beyond. Like I would say, him and Amazing Red is both kind of like two of the more influential guys in modern wrestling.
Absolutely.
These days. And to have them both in this set is just absolutely amazing. So yeah, I'm all on board for more Kenta in the future too.
Mike?
What do you say? More Kenta?
Well, I mean, sure. I think actually both he and Amazing Red have an interesting little case to be made here because, you know, while Indies and Legends are compatible, right? You can always just mix and match your cards and the game works, right? Sure. They're not always necessarily comparable, sure. Right? You know, so then the question is, you know, how would the Legends guys stat the wrestler differently than the Indies team does? Like, and which part of the career you're looking at and, Like I wonder, like, and I just wonder, I don't know that he would have a 4-1 pin in
sure.
Legends.
Right.
Right? Like, as an Indies guy, yeah, but as a Legends guy, maybe 4-1's tough. I mean, that's so, yeah, it would be interesting. I think it's certainly a possibility.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's not coming out in the Tragos Thet set. I'll say that.
Yes.
I can promise
everybody. We're not
going
to get him
that.
To Waterloo. I mean, come on.
And it won't, be in Legends Prime either. So we're not going to backdoor it that way.
Right.
So no, it's not on the books right now. Like it's not definitively on any schedule. But yeah, no, both he and Amazing Red both, I think, could easily, you could see having Legends cards.
Yeah.
Based on what they've accomplished in the past.
So speaking of Legends, let's go back here just a little bit and talk about these two gentlemen.
Mm.
Are they the same man? I can't tell.
It's up to your promoter.
That's right. It is indeed. No, I just think that this is so cool. Whether it's the big Bubba Ray trailer or, you know, the Boss Man trailer, to have both of these cards, obviously, you know, statted a bit differently as they should be. It's just so wonderful to be able to, again, kind of pay tribute. You know, we know that his daughter was thrilled with the cards, which is super cool. And again, somebody that, you know, we lost too soon. You know, he was only 41 when he passed, which is kind of a testament to all that he accomplished in the wrestling world, because, you know, he really kind of spanned nearly, you know, three generations, right? Multiple personas, you know, multiple territories, multiple guys that he worked with. And growing up, you know, I can remember Boss Man in particular was somebody that I hated and then I loved, you know. I remember my my Hasbro figure quite well of Boss Man. I you know, that was one that that I loved. And, you know, he had lots of battles in and out of that beautiful ring. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about the inclusion of Ray Traylor in the Legends game line, and in particular in Prime. Mike?
Well, I mean, I guess the real question when we got Ray Traylor the authorization to do it was, which one do we do?
Right.
Do we do that early career bodyguard type guy with Cornette and, you know, that people know, and who became a champ, by the way? Like, this isn't like he was just some bodyguard, but, you know, that early persona, or do you do that, you know, prison guard persona that everybody, right, that, like, I grew up with, like, you know, that's the one I knew. And I think that we thought it would be like a 60-40 split with people, in which they preferred. And ultimately the decision was made, you know what, let's give them both. We weren't doing a Legends release, that, you know, full release this cycle. So we're like, well, we need to do something big that would be cool for people, because they're not getting a full set. So we thought, we've never done two versions of one guy at the same time. So why not make Ray Traylor be the first? And I think it was worth it. And again, I think that, you know, 60% of the people would have, I think quite frankly, whichever version we picked, we had a lot of people thrilled either way.
Right.
But now whichever version you wanted to use first, you can use them. And that's,
absolutely,
I think, what's, I think, the best part.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really cool way to release a guy like this. And it seems like people are very, very happy about that. Todd, any thoughts, memories about Mr. Ray Traylor?
Well, you know, I'm definitely in the camp of being much more familiar with the prison guard version there. I also had the Hasbro. I lamented never getting the LJN. And now it's very expensive to do.
Yes,
so
it is.
But no, I mean, this is great. This is, you know, probably one of the, you know, one of my favorites of that era then, even as a heel. I always really enjoyed him. And then having both there, and I like the little mechanic with Jim Cornette, with the other version there, which actually that was called out on Uncharted Territories this week. We did release two versions of Jim Cornette at the same time.
Right.
They were, you know,
not
in the same set. They were not in the same
but it also wasn't two versions. It was the same Jim Cornette. It was just one was a wrestling card for you to use. So it wasn't two.
Yes.
Not
two different personas and stuff like that. But yeah, at least that was like two different, you know.
And we also did Gordon Solley, right? We did Gordon Solley twice, too.
Yeah,
that's true. We did do that.
It was the same Gordon Solley. It was just two different iterations of them, so you could use them in different ways.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
But to me, this was the first time we ever did two versions.
Two completely different versions there. Exactly. Exactly. So, but no, I'm absolutely thrilled.
Darn those Uncharted territory guys.
I know, right? They both have the trailer slam, which I saw there, but, you know, a good portion of the rest of the card is different there. Were they done? They were done by different people too, right? Didn't they? Corey did one and Chad did the other one, I believe. I could.
I was told there would be no math.
I'm sorry, but
if they're listening,
I believe
if they're
okay,
listening,
I believe
there's a question for you for your next episode.
I'm pretty sure that was the case there, if I remember.
I know Corey did at least one of them. If he didn't do both, he did one of them, and then it may have been Chad who did the other.
I'm pretty sure that's the case, but yeah,
I know
that's
did
a great job.
I know who did. The
I
next
do know
one
who did that
about.
One.
Mr. Timothy Dalton, Buffalo, New York. Did this amazing giant Bava card. Again,
he didn't draw it, though.
No, he didn't draw it.
Warner drew that. I want to be very clear.
It's
that
gorgeous.
Was not Tim Dalton.
The
I
robe.
Love the art.
I mean, the art is, the art is stellar on this one.
Have you ever seen Tim Dalton's art? It's not. He definitely
would have
published that.
No, I've not.
Consider yourself lucky.
I'd imagine it's too blue for a Legends release, but no, I kid. The card is wonderful. I cannot wait to use it. And I know how much work and effort he put into it just based off of what they said over on UTP and, you know, in particular, you know, really play testing it a lot, you know, really making tweaks. It sounds like it legitimately kept him up at night. It sounds like it might still keep him up at night. But I think it's magnificent work.
I mean, I don't think people understand, like Tim in particular, but all of our Legends team, the work they put in these cards.
Absolutely.
I think there's a thought, oh, I can just throw stats together in a day. And I guess you can. And sometimes you can, especially in the you know, scheme of, I mean, Zeke almost did that with Brody Lee. So I don't want to, like, throw this, but like, you know, in the case of Legends, I think Indies is much more a snapshot in time. Like, right. So how does it feel? Right. You know, like, how does the guy feel today? Whereas Legends is much more of like a historically, where do they fit?
Right. Absolutely.
Kind of question.
That's a great way
and
to put
so,
it.
And so I think that, you know, Tim in particular really takes seriously, like, okay, I have this guy and I've got this guy and I know they should be even. But are they really even?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he works on that, like, to make sure that they are. And all the guys do. You know, Corey, Chad, Tim, they all three of them do. They all have different styles and different ways of approaching it. But Tim is very analytical with it.
Yes.
You know, it was important to him. And I worked on, you know, the Inoki card with him a couple years ago. And I could tell you it's for real. Like, this is not like him just telling a story that he's... I mean, he and I spent, I don't know how much time on the phone walking through it after each one of us had ran like a couple hundred matches with him. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think that the work that they do, it's no surprise I'm a huge fan of, and clearly the care that goes into it, the fact that there is such a well-defined sort of tier list. You know, if you're building out your Fed, your territory, whatever, you can absolutely create a very viable main event, mid-card, upper mid-card, lower card, you know, jobber ranks. Like, you can slot people in to have all of those ranks filled, and they will perform mostly, dice roll funny, obviously, but mostly to your expectation. You're going to be able to get what you want out of them. And I think that that's just a testament to the work that they've put in over the years. And obviously the research that goes into with deciding on what moves to put on a card and where that move should go on a card and how strong a move should be or a finisher should be. So I've yet to be disappointed, quite frankly. And I imagine that will continue going into July, which I can't wait for.
But if I can also say that the artwork on the Legends Prime set, I mean, Werner knocked the cover off the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, Ray Traylor and Baba both are just, I mean, killer pieces of art. So, you know, the one we teased is actually my least favorite. And I don't mean that to say it's not good.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Yeah. Like, it's great. That is Big Bubba, right? But then you look at the other two and it's just like, wow. Yeah, I totally agree with you 100%. You know, speaking of knocking it out of the park, we're gonna go home. So, but before we do, I wanted to say a couple of things. I am thrilled to be back doing this. I have missed it a great deal. Anyone that has, you know, taken the time to kind of reach out or chat in the intervening year knows that I have been incredibly busy. You know, I've been doing a lot of acting again. I have, of course, I had my other podcast, which was, you know, going really, really well until they decided to cancel the show. Then my basement flooded, which is where my studio is, and we didn't have flooring because it was a half-finished basement. We didn't have flooring for about 3 months, and so I wasn't really doing a whole lot with the podcasting or, you know, getting in front of the camera or anything like that. And this has been something that I've wanted to do for a while. Again, we've had conversations about this for a few months now, and to be able to talk about something that I love so much, that means so much to all of us, is always a thrill. And, you know, quite honestly, I was actually going to be at the last con, and I was going to be doing my old, you know, hosting and interviewing duties. Fortunately, I got violently ill. It was not pretty, and that's all I'll say about that. But I couldn't be there, and I was so bummed because, as some of you may know, if you've listened before, one of the first interviews that I ever did, one of the first wrestling interviews that I ever did, was with Magnum TA. And to be able to kind of get back into it by interviewing Nikita would have been a just a huge thrill. So I was sorry I missed it, but I know it was in very capable hands, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. But it's really, truly great to be back. I consider it a privilege to be able to be a part of this. I love it, and I enjoy being able to have these conversations. And more importantly, I mentioned this, I was talking with Chad the other day. The truth of the matter is I've missed my friends. So Mike, Todd, it's really lovely to be back here with you guys. It's really great to be talking with you. And, you know, for anyone who's listening, any of the promoters that have followed along, anyone that I've talked to over the years or become friendly with over the years, I'm still here. And in truth, I do. I miss you guys. And it's really great to be back. And I look forward to doing this more in the future. We are not going to try to keep a weekly schedule because that would kill us. either out of exhaustion or our spouses would murder us. But either way, we will be doing it on a regular basis. We will likely be coming to you at least once a month, but maybe twice a month. It just depends on how much we have to talk about, quite frankly, because we're not going to necessarily be, you know, putting together stuff again every week. So with all of that said, I'm going to throw it over here to Todd. Any last words? Anything you want to say before we get out of here?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mentioned before, but, you know, I am still involved with the conventions, and we do have one coming up in just under 4 weeks on May 4th. Maybe not as themed towards a certain, you know, thing as I had originally thought, but it'll still be on May 4th. And we'll maybe have a little couple nods in, you know, with some of our tournaments and things like that that day. But this Friday, again, I don't know when this is going up, but probably right around the time that this is coming out, because it'll be available for the Road to Galacticon convention on May 4th. We'll have, you know, normal, what we usually do. We'll have a couple different tournaments for Indies, Legends, and Champions. We'll have our Q&A with the, that'll be up.
Those cards have become such huge collector's items.
Todd. Are you sure you don't have to?
I'm sure. I will not check you off that you were on the Zoom before I send out your cards. You just got to buy the ticket, and I'll send out the cards. So there you go. Take the ride. And I know there's a question. I'm going to see if I can get a couple auction items just announced ahead of time, too, at least to the people. I'll email it out there so people kind of know what's going on there. I've exhausted some of my stuff from before, but I always seem to find extra things for this. And I did find a couple signed B. Brian Blair cards recently there. So I'm going to, like, there'll at least be one of those in the auction. I will say that right now.
One of these beauties.
One of those beauties right there.
I love it. I love it. You know, and quite frankly, maybe that will just be the next episode that we do, or not the next episode, but we'll definitely try and do a preview episode for the con. And then, you know, whatever we get at the con will probably be the episode after that, which will be thematic in some ways, especially with what we're going to do for our next episode. But that all sounds awesome.
And I will say, definitely save the dates for June 28th, 29th for Galacticon itself. You know, we're starting the Road to Galacticon on the 4th, but we're ending up...
You might
want to be there on the 27th too, yeah. Get there Friday night, hang out with us Friday night, and then, you know, then all the main stuff, you know, the more game-playing stuff will be on the 28th and 29th. So, in Baltimore. Again, I was just telling Mike before, I was checking out some flights from Chicago to Baltimore just to see, you know, what that kind of looked at, just in case anybody needed to know that information.
I know a guy.
Look, I'm gonna be in Disney World the week before, so we'll see. We'll see what my schedule's like.
Get on that Guardians of the Galaxy ride. That was one of my favorite rides I've ever been on.
Nice. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a lot of fun.
That way you'll know what it feels like to be a champion of the galaxy when you get to Baltimore.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, on that note, Mike, do you have anything to say before we get out of here?
Well, I echo everything. This is like an echoey chamber kind of episode, but I really do, Sam. You hit the nail on the head. It's just great to be with people and people you have a great relationship with, and we've got a good history of this ship pod. I think it's been a good one, and you know, we'll have some fun, and that's really the most important thing. And we want to talk to people because I know people. I've heard quite a bit. What about roll up? And, you know, we wouldn't do the pod for 6 months, and I still had people asking us for what about roll ups. You know, I guess, you know, like another podcast, as long as you guys want to listen to it, I guess we'll do it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But no, great to be back. I think I'm glad people got the cards. Like, I'm always thrilled when people actually get all the stuff because all the work that goes into it. I know everybody's excited to get it. I'm excited for them to get it. Like, you know, I want them to have it and I don't want to have it anymore. You know what I mean? Like, so no, it's great to be back. It's great to be with everybody. And thank you, Todd, for everything you do. Thank you, Sam, for everything you do. And, you know, let's go out there and be cool.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, we are going to get out of here, but stay tuned because the next episode will be the aforementioned interview that I could not be there for. That's right. We're going to be running the Nikita Koloff interview from the last con, the Filsinger Games Perennial 2025. That was conducted by none other than our friend over at the Uncharted Territory podcast, Legends team member, Ed Olson. I cannot wait to drop that all for you. So if you missed out on it, you'll get to hear it. If you were there, you can hear it again. But that will be the next episode. I'll probably drop in about 2 weeks. So stay tuned for that. And then we'll come back a couple weeks after that and we'll preview the Road to Galacticon and have some more information for you, including maybe a couple of teases of what you might be able to see in the auction. So on that note, promoters, thank you so much. It's been a long time. It's good to be back. Take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. Stay safe out there. And remember to always, always roll responsibly.